ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome in, everyone, to a brand new episode of Nosebleeds. I'm Tom Sisdale, joined alongside by Henry Wolf, who is in a boat right now, and Mary Hannah Gallagher. What I'm excited about this episode, we're going to talk about Clayton Kershaw crossing the 3,000 strikeout milestone. We're going to talk about the Yankees and their struggles in the month of June, as well as the Mets, who have had sort of an up and down recent month, and then as well as the All-Star, our snubs, and then some mid-season award predictions. But before we get started, how was everyone's 4th of July? We are recording this the morning after 4th of July, which was pretty eventful. Mine was fun. We saw some fireworks, but we left halfway through the fireworks show, so we avoided all the traffic, which was low-key the strat. So I recommend that to anyone for their 4th of July festivities next year. Henry, how was your 4th of July?
My 4th was great. I had a great time. My family and all my nuclear family come down. We spend time on the water. Nice thing about Maryland, though, is today's the big celebration day. So I had to wake up early this morning after what happened last night. I'm ready to go. So.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out of this, you know, momentous occasion to sit down with us and record and talk some baseball. Mary Hannah, how was your 4th of July?
It was good. Yeah, it was also eventful. I worked. I had an urgent care trip, which I think is how every holiday should go. If there's not at least one urgent care trip on a holiday a year, I think you're living life wrong, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. Other than that, pretty chill. Yeah.
That's what we like to hear. So now let's get straight into today's episode. We're going to first talk about Clayton Kershaw, Dodgers pitcher, reaching 3,000 strikeouts. Many, many people did not think he was going to do it in this game. He had two strikeouts on the night going into the sixth inning. And then with two outs left, he finally secured that, you know, third strikeout that pushed him over the edge. And my first question for y'all today is that, you know, this was one of the major milestones that we had coming into the year, was Clayton Kershaw reaching 3,000 strikeouts. But if you look at the list of active pitchers who are sort of approaching that, there really aren't many. There's Chris Sale, who's at 2,500. There's Garrett Cole at 2,200. There's Charlie Morton, which, Henry, I know you love Charlie Morton with a burning passion. But there's really not a lot of guys who can seriously reach 3,000 strikeouts. Is that sort of indicative of pitching, like in this current age, or are we still going to see guys that reach that 3,000 milestone? Henry, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'll jump in here. And first of all, I just want to give a huge congratulations to Clayton. And he's joining a list of four lefties to reach 3,000 Ks. He's amongst Steve Carlton, CC Sabathia from the Yankees, and of course, Randy Johnson. And watching Clayton pitch, it's just such a nostalgia trip for me, because I remember when he was like 2 or 3 years into his career pitching against like young Garrett Cole and young Max Scherzer. And those pitchers are just so fun to watch. And the way pitching has turned into this modern era of baseball, where you're looking at really high velocity and really high spin rates, it really is amazing to see another great player to reach such a great milestone, where you see a lot of guys lose their careers early. He posted a career ERA of 2.50 right now, which is also just spectacular. And I think that alone would get him into the Hall of Fame regardless. So,
yeah, I think not calling him a Hall of Famer right now would be naive. But also, I just coming off of his injuries last season, like his left big toe, right? Something like that. And also, that just like kept him out of the postseason and really farther away from that goal. But being able to hit that goal all with one team too. Hasn't he always been with the Dodgers? Yeah.
Yes, and yeah.
Signing that 1-year contract last year, I think really just pays testament to kind of the pitching staff of the Dodgers, and how committed they are to really becoming like a franchise, or not even a franchise, but like a dynasty, I guess. It was really fun to watch when it happened. I watched like all over the internet, like his family breaking down in tears, and like that's kind of what it's all about, I think. I love watching families like absolutely become puddles when like their athlete does something miraculous like that. So that was fun.
Yeah, really, really touches the soul, touches the heart there when stuff like that happens. But just to circle back on like whether we're gonna see pitchers do the same thing, I don't think we're gonna see pitchers reach that 3,000 milestone. We see a sort of a prioritization of, velocity and sort of an age where, pitchers are gonna get two Tommy John surgeries, in their career. And I don't think we're gonna see the longevity that Clayton Kershaw has. I mean, even now he's sort of, falling off a, I don't want to say a cliff, but he's gently rolling down a hill in terms of his playing ability. So and so it was quite impressive for him to just, get over that final hurdle, despite those injuries that you were talking about, Mariana, and to reach that milestone is really impressive. But now we're going to transition to a topic that, I'm not particularly thrilled to talk about, but we're going to talk about the Yankees. They're on a six-game losing streak. They just got swept in Toronto against the Blue Jays, including on Canada Day, in quite just embarrassing fashion. Blown leads, really lackluster pitching. Giancarlo Stanton did hit his first home run, but outside of that, not really a lot of positivity to look at. Mariana, we'll start with you. What is flagging concerns about this Yankees team? Is this just sort of a blip and they're just going to get back to normal, or are there some more underlying issues?
I think they're definitely in a tough spot right now, and injuries are really getting the best of them. I think going into the season, we talked about the injuries of some of their pitching staff and how we thought that that was going to affect the team. And they kind of came into the season with heavy hitting. I mean, Thomas, you were at that game where they like broke a home run record or something like that. Yeah. But I remember being on. Like, I think it was the Women's Day one-on-one. And I said, like, they're not going very far this season. It's going to catch up to them. And I was right. It did. Look where we are now. But no, I do think once they become healthier, they're going to come back and they're going to be as much of a threat as they were last season as we enter the postseason. Because as we all know, postseason is so different. But they have the talent. I just think they need to find a way to be consistent while missing some of their key players beyond just relying on Aaron Judge to hit it out of the park literally for them.
Yeah, and I want to touch on that too, because when you're missing your key players, you really are trying to rely on your platoon guys. And I'll try to keep this as professional as possible.
All right,
But
all right.
when you blow a 10-game division lead, that doesn't scream Yankees to me. This is a franchise that goes out and their goal is to win the World Series. And even Aaron Judge has said this in interviews, is when they don't do that, the season is a failure. So what I look at is when I see a team that is full of frauds. I see Volpe, who isn't hitting and is not by any means a gold glove shortstop, or Jason Dominguez, who's a rookie and there's a lot of hope, but he's just not performing well. And I just need to see maybe some of the veteran guys give them a word to the ear. It's like, here's what the Yankees way is, and here's how we need to perform. Toronto's standing on business right now. They have the AL East lead, and Tampa Bay is also very sneaky, and they're tied with the Yankees right now. So it's going to be crazy to see the AL East shake out. I know the Orioles are still finding their way, and the Red Sox are still definitely in contention. So it's still one of the toughest divisions in baseball to this date.
Yeah, finding their ways is a generous way of describing the Orioles situation right now. But I won't press on that too much. But just to go larger picture here, where are we seeing this Yankees team end up? And we can talk about the AL East overall and sort of how you see things shaken out by the end of the season. But we're halfway through. this is about where we thought, you know, the teams were going to be. We thought it was going to be a little bit more competitive. I certainly didn't think the Yankees were going to have a 10-game lead. So it is disheartening to see them sort of blow that. But it being a close battle is sort of what we expected coming into the season. If you had to give me a ranking of teams 1 through 5, where are you seeing, you know, the team shaken out and who's making the postseason? Henry, we'll start with you. Who do you have taking the AL East?
So I really like this Tampa Bay team right now. I love watching Yandy Diaz, the Lowe brothers, Jonathan Aranda, who got snubbed from the All-Star game, and the speedy guy Chandler Simpson. They're a lot of fun to watch right now. They're very scrappy. I'd love to see them at the top of the list, but I feel like it's going to be Toronto, Yankees, Tampa, Red Sox, Orioles. And I know that's how it looks right now, but the teams, they're going to fluctuate a lot, but that's how they're going to shake out. That's just how the AL East always is.
Yeah, I was going to say that same list, but I'm gonna shake things up for controversy, I guess. I'm thinking Toronto on top. There's no, I just, they have such a momentum right now, 6-game winning streak. They really don't have any like internal threat, I think, to the momentum that they have going. So I'm gonna go with them at number one. Then I think I'm gonna go Tampa Bay at number two. I think they're overtaking the Yankees. Like you said, Hank, there's a lot of really great stuff happening from them. And I think that that's just going to build as the Yankees continue to crumble from literally the inside out. So I'm going to go Rays 2, Yankees 3, Boston 4, Baltimore 5.
Okay, well,
Sorry.
this is not, you know, this is not the optimistic episode that, you know, Yankees fans were hoping for. So I apologize to all Yankees fans out there that we have two, you know, anti-New York, you know, people, you know, clowning on the Yankees right now. Personally, I have Yankees won, you know, not being biased or anything. Yankees won. We'll
Yeah.
go Tampa Bay 2. We'll go Toronto 3. Red Sox 4 and then Baltimore 5. And you know, I think those top two teams, I think they make the playoffs. And then, you know, we'll see if Toronto is able to sneak in. Baltimore's a lost hope, but you know, that's besides the point. Now we'll transition over to Queens, where we'll talk about the Mets, who've had a bit of an up and down June. They got off to an incredible start, sort of larger picture, incredible start to the season. But then have struggled of late. There was sort of a streak where there were 1-10, including a sweep against the Pirates, which is a team you don't want to lose a game to, let alone lose, you know, three straight to. But they are rebounding. They're on a 3-game win streak, including a win last night against the New York Yankees, who, you know, as we've touched on, have been struggling. So the thing that has been good to see is that Juan Soto has responded in a big way after sort of a lackluster start to the season. Hank, or Henry, I should say, what are you saying in this team? What are you seeing in this Mets team? Are they still the dominant team that we saw in the beginning of the season, or are they sort of showing cracks?
So, having as an Orioles fan and watching the early struggles, it kind of gives me hope for the Mets because there are 162 games in the season. And when you go and you lose a series to division rivals like the Braves and then get swept by the Pirates, it can be tough to like know what it feels like to win again. And so when you have to go out there as if it's a new day, and I think they did that last night against the Yankees, and when they start hitting the ball again like the Mets do, they'll find their wins again, they'll find their groove, and all will be well for the Mets. I think they'll be just fine in the long run.
Mariana, what are you seeing this Mets team? Are they doing okay?
I do think they're doing okay. I think, like Hank said, they're on the come up, honestly. They had that tough go, but I do also think that going through a season as long as the baseball season is, you're going to have like a dip in performance. That's just how any season goes, even for short seasons like football. Like a team could have like a 3-game losing streak and then come back, you know? So I am not worried, especially seeing that like most of their heavy hitters have like right around like a 266, like hitting average, you know? I'm not, I think that they're going to be okay. And I definitely am excited for the maybe opportunity to have another playoff Subway Series again. That is the only time I will ever wish the Yankees well, is if it means that we have a Subway Series, because that's fun. But other than that, yeah, I think they're coming back.
Yeah, I think the thing that shocked me in the beginning of the season was how dominant the sort of the Mets pitching staff was, with despite all those injuries and sort of some random guys thrown in there, like Clay Holmes doing really well for the Mets. So I think it's finally sort of caught up to them. I won't say that, the Mets are doomed and they're not going to make the playoffs, but I think they've come back to reality a little bit more. And they're going through some struggles right now, and that's sort of what it's about. That's sort of the name of the game, and sort of the dog days of summer is, just getting through the season. Like Henry mentioned, it's a 162 game season. So there's a lot of ball games left, and I think the Mets will be fine, heading into October, heading into September. But now we'll transition to the All-Star voting. It just concluded with the All-Star rosters coming out a couple of days ago. Really no major surprises. I would say some of the major surprises have been, Jacob Wilson, rookie for the Athletics, being an All-Star starter over guys like Bobby Witt Jr., Jeremy Peña, who have had, pretty impressive years. Outside that, there really weren't any major shockers. Mary Hannah, were there any snubs in your mind, or are there any guys more deserving than the guys who ultimately got the nod as All-Star starters?
I definitely think seeing Aaron Judge on there made a lot of sense, especially kind of being in New York and seeing all of the hype that's around him. But I also kind of think that James Wood was kind of a snub, you
Yeah.
know, arguably like the biggest snub of the year. Like he was a highly kind of regarded rookie this year, and he really has been phenomenal on the Nationals. I mean, he is arguably better than some of the other outfield starters that were in that All-Star roster. That and kind of Pete Alonso, which maybe is New York rival team propaganda, but I just think that his home run and RBI production is not something that you can just gloss over when considering all-star voting.
Henry, who are you seeing as sort of the major people who missed out on sort of getting that All-Star nomination?
Yeah, so the big one for me was Jonathan Aranda from Tampa Bay. And I can't quite recall right now who was selected over him at first base. It looked like it was either Paul Goldschmidt. It might have been Vlad Guerrero.
It was,
Which
yeah.
it I have poses another question for me, but Aranda was posted at 316 average and 875 OPS through the first half of the season. That's incredible numbers, and that's beating Guerrero in any day of the week. But I just have another question for you guys, is because I think the All-Star game has become a popularity contest. The fan voting and arguably even this international vote with all these Dodgers making the All-Star game is how does the MLB come back and tweak the All-Star game selections? Do we make it coach voting, players voting? How do we see the guys that we want to see in the All-Star game play and not just big names? Like, I know Mike Trout was leading for a while, and I'm honest to God, I don't think he even belongs in the vote this year. He just is not his usual self. So.
And that's an excellent question, because that we've had a same similar conversation about the NBA and the NBA All-Star game, where it's largely a popularity contest, but the NBA does have an sort of at the end of the year the All-NBA team, which is a little bit w worth more in terms of contract incentive, stuff like that. But the MLB doesn't really have that. They just have the All-Star game. And so a lot of when you're debating players, All-Star nominations, has a significant weight, despite it just being sort of a popularity contest. And how to fix it, not really sure. I think you can do a combination of coaches vote, players vote, and like the fan vote. But at the end of the day, it's a tough thing to do, because you want fans to be invested in the All-Star game and you want them to watch. And if they don't recognize half the guys out there, then, maybe they're not going to tune in. So it's a tricky situation. I'm not sure quite how MLB resolves it. Mary Hannah, do you have any, do you have some grand solution to solve all this?
I really like coach voting. I think that anonymous coach voting is a system that I think is just players that know the game and have to fill out scouting reports every week. All that they can do, and they play pretty much every team, or they at least pay attention to every team, So those people, they know what a good player is, because I mean, skill is something that you coach, and a coach could seek that out. So I really like that idea about coach voting. Other than that, I understand why the MLB would want to have voting. I think that it keeps fans engaged. And I think that if fans don't have something like that, where they can, something to pay attention for, I guess, then that will maybe affect the league more than having these corrupt all-star games. I think if we're talking about the art of the game, then coach voting is the obvious answer. But if we're talking about keeping people interested and wanting to keep the MLB as prominent as it is at the moment, then fan voting might be the best way to go about that.
Henry, what are you saying? Is fan voting sort of just the way it's just going to be, or are you wanting sort of coach voting, players voting? What do you want to say?
So, I mean, if I was the commissioner of the MLB, I'd definitely look into making some changes. I feel like it's a great point, like keeping fans invested. That makes the MLB All-Star game one of the best. And having been to one, they are just so much fun to be at because you see the guys that you wanted to see play. I just think like now we're entering a new era. Like you see Clayton Kershaw and a lot of these old pitchers going out of the league, and you have the younger guys coming in. I know the game is definitely centered around an older population of people that like to watch, but with a younger generation starting to play in the game and watch the game, it becomes more important to give credit where credit's due to these young players. So.
Yeah, you want to see players, if they make an All-Star game, they want to feel like they earned it and they deserved it. And not to say that any of the guys who made the All-Star game, didn't deserve it, because they've all had, spectacular years. Maybe there were just guys behind them that had, even better years, but just didn't have quite that name recognition.
Hear me
And
out. Oh, sorry. No, you go, Thomas.
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Right. Hear me out. I think I came up with the solution. So, MLB comes up with who should be in contention for All-Star voting. That way, players are like, oh, look at me. Like, the MLB think that I could do it. And then keep the fans engaged by wanting to vote. Because I also think that that would keep more fans engaged, because a lot of the problem, I think, with this is that players are. Fans aren't watching every team's games. Fans are watching their team's games. But if you give a fan a list of five people and they can Google up like their ERA or their hitting average, then they'll be like, oh, that person should do it. Or like watch that person's highlights.
I love that
Get rid of
idea.
the
That's a
commissioner.
great
Like,
idea.
actually give, what if we just called the commissioner up?
Yeah. And that gives fans an incentive to start paying attention to some other teams right around mid-season. And so I
Yeah.
think you get even just more coverage, more audience participation in games across the league instead of just centered in their region.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think that's a fantastic idea. I think we've cracked the code on how to fix the All-Star, ballot
Maybe I should
selection.
copyright this, because what if they listen? And they're
Yeah,
gonna
Manfred does live in New York, so we might need to, make a little trip when we get back to school.
Okay.
Anyway, now we'll transition to some, mid-season awards, and then I guess that's a larger conversation of who do you think is going to win, sort of the major awards. We'll first start with the American League MVP. It's a really two-man race. It's Aaron Judge, who's having one of the best years in history in terms of statistics. And then we have Cal Raleigh, who's just hit 35 home runs last night, who's, I mean, just unbelievable to watch. So which who are you voting for? If you had to make a choice right now, are you voting for, the catcher who's doing incredible things, or are you doing something for one of the best hitters or the best hitter on the planet? I don't know why I said one of the best hitter. Henry, we'll start with you. Who are you giving the award to? Who are you giving the MVP award to?
It's really close right now, and I'll tell you what, Aaron Judge might be one of the best hitters we've ever seen play the game. And it's hard not to say he's a lock already. But if Cal Raleigh finds his pace and ends up hitting 60, 65 home runs this season, it would be hard not to ask the question, does Cal Raleigh deserve this? Because although Judge and there's a lot of other guys who have hit 60 home runs in a season, it's definitely a feat. And if Cal Raleigh can pull that off, I don't see why he doesn't deserve it. He's pulling the Mariners along.
Yeah, I totally see where you're coming from. However, I think Aaron Judge just is the front runner. His success at bat and also in the field is undeniable. He's just an elite player, and I do think that the MLB is shaped around competing to an Aaron Judge level right now. And that's MLB. Or, sorry, that's MVP kind of aura, I guess.
Are you a big fan of Aura when it comes to making your giving
I
your
think
awards out?
aura is huge because aura implies culture, and culture implies a way of changing and affecting the game, you know?
Naps. Yeah, that's you.
And Aaron Judge is affecting the culture of the MLB by having an aura of excellence.
Wow.
Couldn't
Wow.
have said it any better.
Well,
Thank
you won't hear that on MLB Network. You will not hear the word aura. I think I tend to agree with Mariana here. I think Aaron Judge is, I mean, underlying statistics say he's, the clear favorite. But there is a probably going to be a little bit of voter fatigue when it comes in. I think it's sort of a similar situation with Jokic and SGA, where, voters are just tired of giving Jokic the award, so they just, they handed it out to Shai, not saying he didn't deserve it. But maybe there was a guy a little bit more deserving. So I think if Cal hits, that 60, 65 home run mark, I think voters are going to say, you know what, Aaron Judge, you've had your time, but someone else, has certainly earned it. But now we'll transition to the NL MVP, which is, I would like to, I think it's a bit of more of a three-man race. Maybe it's just sort of a two-man race, but it's Shohei Ohtani, who's batting at an incredibly high level, and is also beginning to pitch. He pitches in his fourth start later tonight. And then you've got Pete Crow Armstrong, who's doing incredible things in batting and in the field, and on the base paths. And then you've got Freddie Freeman, who's been phenomenal but has been injured, and that could be something that voters are going to stray away from. Mariana, who are you giving the MVP for? Obviously, Ohtani's providing value with his pitching and his hitting, and PCA is providing value with his hitting and his defense. Which one do you like more? Do you like the latter combination, or do you like Ohtani's two-way player?
I think that I'm gonna have to go with Ohtani, and not because of my aura culture argument, although I do think that still applies here. I just think that having a player that is playing that double position is just insane for him to be able to pull off so undeniably well. I mean, he's throwing 100 mile per hour fastballs. He's just sort of insane and not real. And I think that thinking that Ohtani is not going to get that MVP would be glossing over his just sheer talent.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback right off that. Like, I have Ohtani in all caps in my notes, and PCA not having an MVP season. He's a great hitter, but he's making fielding errors and he's not pitching. And Freddie Freeman, great hitter, age is approaching. He's not pitching either. This award is Ohtani's award. It's the Shohei Ohtani award. It's going to go to him next year, the year after, as long as he's pitching and hitting at this level. He's just a phenomenal part of the game, and he's phenomenal for the game.
Okay. Personally, I'm going to give it to PCA. I think the value he provides on a defensive level at a premium position is something that I just like more than Ohtani. And I don't know, call me crazy. I think PCA has a little bit more aura. And we're a big fan of aura on this pod. Henry's rolling his head. I mean, he's just
No, we are.
okay.
I'm here for it. I respect the grind, Thomas. I do.
Okay. Anyway, the Thomas hate's not going to be tolerated on this pod. We're now going to transition to the Cy Young Awards. In the AL, it's really Tarek Skubal and Garrett Crochet. Marianne, I know you're a big fan of Garrett Crochet. Henry shaking his head. Henry, what do you disagree with that statement?
So we were talking about this earlier. We're in a pitching era of velo, and Scooble's got velo, and he's got speed changes. And Crochet is a great pitcher, but he's not at Scooble's level. I love Scooble also because of his energy. He brings the energy. He is celebrating every strikeout, every inning ending out. He's there to play. He's having fun. And I know he won it last year, but I really feel like as long as he stays healthy and he could be the next Kershaw we see. Like, this guy's great. I don't see why he doesn't deserve this award this year. Nobody else is pitching at his level.
While I want to agree with you, I'm just going to go ahead and disagree because I think that having such a player like Crochet, who is just really making so many strides when it comes to just like velocity of a pitch, I think, and it increased after he became a starter, which is crazy. And just he now has five pitches that he uses. I mean, he doesn't use them all, like all five all the time, but he has five separate pitches that he can throw off on you. He also has an elite strikeout rate with he leads in strikeouts right now as of today with 144. I just also think that throughout the season, having that like being consistently better as the season has gone on, he has shown how adaptable and also coachable he is, even when he's being compounded by the pressure of being put on center stage.
Yeah, I think it's closer than people think. I think people are thinking Skubal's sort of a shoo-in, but I think Crochet's given him a run for his money. I think it's gonna be closer than it definitely was last year. And in the NL, we're running out of time real quick. But who do we have? Paul Skene's sort of the favorite right now, but Zach Wheeler's obviously having a dominant season, and Logan Webb sort of trailing behind those two. Mary Hannah, who do you have? Paul Skene's, or are you taking Zach Wheeler, sort of the underdog coming in?
Well, I think I'm going to go Paul Skenes just because he is like almost like nastier than he was advertised to be. You know what I'm saying? He looks like he looks scary standing up there, and he does boast scary statistics if I was a batter.
Yeah, I'm with Mariana on this too. Skenes is the shoo-in. He's got the dedication. He's a scary guy to talk to outside. Skenes all the way.
Yeah, I think Paul Skenes is really the only reason why the Pirates still exist as a franchise, to be honest. So, that's going to do it for today's episode. We've had a fantastic episode talking ball. Some of us are on boats, some of us are just sitting at a desk like a normal person, but it's been a fantastic episode. I have been Thomas Tisdale, joined alongside by Mary Hannah Gallagher and Henry Wolf. We'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks, y'all, for tuning in.
Thanks,
See you in
Thomas.
the next one.